Rick Bird joining us here on the program, as he does each and every Wednesday. We do love that, Coach, especially when you come off two big W's over the weekend. Rick, how are you, sir? How you doing, Coach?
I'm great. How are you guys?
How are you driving in the snow, Coach?
I'm okay. Pretty conservative.
That's a good way to be. You've got a great week coming up, of course, with Murray State and Austin Peay. Not only some historical brand battles there like we've seen in the tournaments between you and Murray State, but all three of you guys right now tied for first place in the OVC. What do you expect out of your team, and what do you want to learn from your team this week?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I don't know about expecting. What I hope for, I think, is just a team that plays with a little more consistency than we have, and a little more, patience and execution on offense. We're the Eastern Illinois win we had last Saturday, we made a bunch of threes, but they really weren't good shots. We didn't get good shots. Our guys just made some tough ones and into shot clock things. We've got to execute better. Got to have a little bit more. I've got to help them have a better plan for what we're doing. It's just, this is a different year for us. We don't have an inside post player that scores a lot of points. And that's kind of in the past the way we've anchored our offense. And so I'm still searching a little bit, and they're still searching a little bit. So that part's important. And then Murray's just really, really good. They're good on both ends of the floor. Got two of the best players in the league, and trying to defend them will take all we got.
Coach, good to talk to you. I obviously been a little tied up. My apologies, I haven't seen you lately. Hope to see you soon.
Thanks.
You've been coaching a long time and been very successful at it, but like you talked about, the last 4 years, you had 70% conversion in the post. I mean, you had Evan Brads shooting close to 70%, and now you've got to go beyond that. How big of a challenge is it for you to say, okay, we've got to find another way because we're not going to convert at that pace?
Well, you know, you're right. I mean, we're not going to, almost no matter who would succeed him. We did think that we had some post players that could deliver in there, and if you can throw it in there and score, you know, have a guy shoot 55%, then you're still scoring more points per possession than the average team is, and you throw in our ability to shoot the three around that. The big problem is it's not necessarily that we're not getting that kind of production inside, is that the other teams know it, and so they're making it tougher for us to get the threes. Our threes, which we're kind of known for, were always a result of having to guard inside first.
Now, you talked about what you're looking for this season and looking for that consistency. You know going into the season, no matter how good your team is, you're in a one-bid league. So having said that, the way you're able to coach, you've got time to get this thing together. Is that accurate, or am I just crazy?
Yeah. No, that's a good way to put it, and that's something that we all have to keep in mind. You know, we've been fortunate enough to win several regular season championships, and I think that's important just in terms of an accomplishment. So sometimes I get too tied up in if we lose this and we lose that, we're really behind the eight ball. But the last 2 years have been great examples in our conference. Austin Peay finished eighth and won the tournament, and then Jacksonville State finished, third or fourth in the conference, and they ended up winning the tournament. And so that's what we all have to keep in the back of our mind, that we've got to keep getting better.
Rick Bird joining us here, head coach at Belmont. And, Coach, there's been some rumors and talk about the season starting earlier. I know a lot of people come to the college basketball world a little bit later on in the year. Those of us who are junkies, we love it in November. But what is your idea and solution for the November and December months? You obviously, earlier doesn't feel like the right thing, at least on the surface. You're way smarter than I am. What do you think about that?
Yeah. let's don't have an IQ test on that. I think that what they're talking about, at least in the short term, is just moving it up so that we can play games as early as Tuesday of the week, which now is Friday of the week. And so it's not a wholesale, let's start playing way earlier than we have been. That I like a lot from a scheduling standpoint, because it's difficult to get all your game, your pre-conference games in the small window that we have right now between when the season starts and then now our conference starts after right after Christmas. So if you look back at the dates that we played this year, it was crazy. I mean, it was NBA-like schedule. And so that's going to give us a little bit more wiggle room. And that first night, at least it'll be on a Tuesday night, and I think you'll see a lot of marquee matchups that night. And it won't be sharing the stage with college football or NFL football on the weekend.
Coach, the other big rule, there's a couple other things, obviously, and you've been on the rules committee and know a lot about the ins and outs of your sport and how complicated it is to get things changed. And the NBA commissioner, Adam Silver, has talked about this. This is an ongoing conversation with sports fans everywhere about the one-and-done rule, which, again, is not a college basketball rule for everybody out there. It's an NBA rule. If you were in charge of the NBA, what would your rule be?
Well, here's the way I kind of look at it. I don't like the one and done stuff any better than anybody else. But just think about Belmont, for example. We have a lot of students there that are gifted and talented musically. And if we've got the next Vince Gill or Garth Brooks or somebody, somebody wants him to cut a record, somebody wants him or her to go on tour,
Moon Taxi,
then they can do it immediately. And it's always kind of been odd to me that we could keep any one human being from going and doing what they want to do if they're good enough to do it. I think it ought to be just wide open in that regard, and they can go right after high school. That's the NBA's decision. But if somebody's good enough and wants to do it and try it, then they should. I wish that we had a better system. I really wish that we had. I know we've got the G League now, it's called. I really wish that if kids wanted to play professionally right away, they'd go straight to there, and college basketball would be about college students playing basketball, not a farm system for the NBA.
Coach, you got a supporter right here on that rule. I'm 100% with you on that. Rick Bird joining us here, coming up against Murray State tomorrow night, 6 o'clock. ESPNU, by the way, should be a ton of fun against Murray State. Last one, Coach, and that is about sort of officiating in general. We see all these rules in the NFL getting more and more complicated. We certainly see hockey rules and review getting more complicated. Baseball fans are asking questions about should the strike zone be computerized, and certainly we've seen a lot of changes in basketball, especially in the college level in the last few years with the hand checking and all that stuff to free it up and changing of the shot clock. Just in general, do you think officiating is getting worse on the whole in every sport, or do you think it's just more covered in general?
I think the second. I think officiating is it, you know, I can't say year by year, but over the course of time, officiating is better than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. I don't think the average fan has any idea how much work those men and women put in to be as good as they can be at officiating a game. In our case, college basketball. That's very, very difficult to officiate and get right. And do I think that there are times when they're just missing the boat, that they don't really understand the game like they should? Certainly I do. But, gosh, the amount of – I'm telling you, that they watch video like crazy. They get – believe me, they get – there's pressure on those guys to get things right, or they hear it from their supervisors, from the national supervisor. You have a high-profile game where you got to go to the video. Everybody complains about the time. All of us do. Nobody likes it. But those two or three guys over there looking at that video, if they come out of there and get it wrong, everybody in the world is going to say, well, you even had the video and you couldn't get it right. So they're going to watch that thing till the commercial comes on sometimes.
Coach, always a pleasure. Again, the game coming up tomorrow, 6 o'clock on ESPNU, nationally televised there with Murray State. And then again, Austin Peay, both those games at home. So go get your tickets now and go swing by. It should be battle for first place all week. Should be a lot of fun. Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Coach.
Rick Bird, head coach at Belmont. Again, Murray State, Austin Peay, and Belmont all tied for first place right now in the OVC. They will play both of those teams at home at the Curb Event Center, of course, coming up this weekend, tomorrow and Saturday. Should it be a ton of fun.
Oh, by the way, check out the game, Nashville.com. We'll be there giving coverage for Belmont Murray State. Do some rapid reactions.
Does that mean Julian Council? Is that what that means?
Yeah, that means me.
All right. Are you going to wear your Lipscomb shirt?
No.
That would be weird.
I don't have a Lipscomb shirt.
Also want to remind everybody, ESPN 102.5 The Game and 94.9 Game 2 is the home of MTSU Blue Raider basketball. We got great college basketball in the city right now. Listen to MTSU basketball on 94.9 Game 2 on Thursday, of course, versus Marshall. Tip time at 7 p.m. And then Saturday versus rival Western Kentucky with the tip time at 6 o'clock. Win in the borough. Tune in to 97.5 for the game broadcast and 95.1 for Game 2. Those are just in the borough, of course. You can catch everything else right here on 94.9 Game 2 riding around in Nashville. Kermit Davis going to join us tomorrow on the program to talk basketball. So like I said, it's starting to turn into college basketball season around here, and we got some great coaches and some fun teams to watch in this city. There's no question about
it. One more plug. Also, I will be making the trip up north, I-65 or something like that, to Bowling Green, Kentucky. That's the highway,
correct?
You've
driven to Louisville like three times.
Yeah, well, right, I forget, okay? There's a lot of highways over here. So I-65, I'll be taking a trip up Saturday night for the Western Kentucky, Middle Tennessee
If you're
game.
Going to Austin Peay, you take 24.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't know whether to laugh or cry.
Yeah, I don't know either. He's driven to Louisville for like North Carolina baseball games, and he goes right past Bowling Green every time.
What, just like Uber to everything or what?
No, I drive.
You can't Uber to Bowling Green.
Well, I mean, apparently he doesn't know where he's going.
There's I-40, there's I-24, there's I-65. So I'm not used to all these I's.
You know, Franklin Road turns into Murfreesboro Road.
Do you guys know that this is? I'm hoping that our audience knows this. I don't know if Julian knows this. You know that odd numbers go east and west, and even numbers go north and south on the interstate system.
He didn't know that.
I hope
no, not. They definitely did not teach us that in North Carolina education.
40 runs from like Outer Banks, North Carolina to like San Francisco. And I-75 runs from like Naples to like,
you know, I lived in the days of maps when we would get out the big paper
atlases.
Map. Yeah, no, yeah, or you know, and my wife could never look at those things.
Well, that's why you have a mobile device now for that.
Yeah,
which is great. All right, when we come back, we're obviously going to talk to John Kincaid coming up in a few minutes, which I can't wait for. But when we come back, there's one stupid rule in the NFL that's got to go, and we want it changed. We'll explain when we come back right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Corey Curtis, Braden Gall here, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Can't wait for John Kincaid. I know Julian Council is like bouncing off the walls back there to talk with John Kincaid of 680 The Fan in Atlanta. Always love talking with him. We'll get to know Matt LaFleur a little bit from him, as he covered him when he was working under Kyle Shanahan in the Atlanta Falcons. So excited to talk with John, and really we could just talk about anything and I'd have a good time talking with him. Coming up in just a few minutes. Preds do win last night 1-0 over the Vegas Golden Knights. So we'll talk with Willie Donick coming up in the final hour as obviously some news there with the Ryan Johansson injury. Victor Arvidsson eligible to come back on Thursday. The real quick question I have, though, and the real problem I have with this whole hiring thing, and I don't know if it's going to hurt the Titans or not. I'm not sure yet. But the rule that is in the NFL that is in place that I think is completely absurd, And in the college game, it's the complete opposite, and it works just fine. In the NFL, there's a week after the championship games that take place this weekend where you can interview candidates, but only if you've already interviewed them, which you cannot do, of course, if you've got a sitting head football coach. So the Titans, because of the timing of their move, haven't interviewed anybody yet.
Well, let's analyze that. There's a reason why teams normally don't have to do that interview, because teams that are in the playoffs don't change head coaches.
But what is the point of the rule to say, yeah, you can have all these interviews if it's the second interview with the guy versus the first interview with the guy? So the Titans, if you were, in theory, if Josh McDaniels, in theory, were still available, it appears he's going to the Colts. If Pat Shurmur, the offensive coordinator for the Vikings, were still available, it appears he's going to the Giants. If those two things, if you were interested in Matt Patricia, the defensive coordinator for the Patriots, who appears to be going to the Lions, or John DeFilippo, for example, the guy we've already talked about, the offensive coordinator, the quarterback's coach for the Philadelphia Eagles, all coaching this weekend, none of whom have been interviewed by John Robinson and the Titans, they would all have to wait until after the Super Bowl to talk to any of them, which then probably hurts your ability to either A, hire them, or B, them hire a coaching staff. So that is an issue. Why in the world you can't talk to these guys during the bye week? You know, everybody else can talk to them if you've already interviewed them. If you haven't interviewed them, then you can't talk to them. It's the second interview is the only thing that's allowed during this upcoming week, which is next week. I don't know. It's an absolutely ridiculous rule, in my opinion.
You didn't bring up who it hurts the most. The candidates. I mean,
it forces them to make a decision.
These guys may not get a job because of it. Look at the guy from Seattle, Dan Quinn.
That was the worst kept secret in the world.
But there was a year
we knew he was going to Atlanta.
Yeah, but the year before he got passed over because he was in the Super Bowl and he didn't get to do a lot of interviews because of that whole process. And there are some guys who, because teams don't want to wait.
Well, Kyle Shanahan was last year too.
Yeah.
We knew Kyle Shanahan was going to the Niners. I don't think it's hurt. I think it hurts them hiring a staff, maybe.
Yeah, but I think
we know Josh McDaniels is going to the Colts. Guys are going to these jobs.
I know you don't want to hurt the teams, but I mean, this is what it is.
To me, the rule doesn't do anything.
Yeah,
like that's my issue.
Well,
with
that's
this.
My thing is like if these guys want to interview him, let them interview.
What did Jeremy Pruitt just do?
Yeah, he just finished the season.
He interviewed. He took a job and then coached for Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens. It works everywhere. Tom Herman for the Ohio State Buckeyes took the Houston job and then worked. Kirby Smart took the Georgia job and then worked for Alabama.
If I took another job, I would stay at News 2 for 2, 3, 4 weeks, however long I had to put in my notice for.
And it doesn't mean you still can't do some things to get ready for the other job.
Yeah.
And that's what happens in college. It works just fine. What did it hurt Kyle Shanahan going to San Francisco? Did it hurt Dan Quinn going to Atlanta?
Well, it hurts Kyle Shanahan in the fourth quarter. We'll say that.
I was more talking about getting ready for the 49ers job.
Well, his fourth quarter plan was terrible.
Yes, I don't. Well, in the third quarter, and you don't have to talk about John Kincaid before John Kincaid comes on. We don't need to talk about this before he comes on. He's had enough of the fourth quarter comeback, I'm sure, down in Atlanta. But it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, if there should just be the open period, like when recruiting, where you have a dead period. Next week should just be open for anybody to talk to anybody. I don't care if they're coaching the Super Bowl. I don't care if they're not coaching. Next week, if you're allowed to interview people, whether it's the second interview or not, you should be allowed to interview anybody. And that helps both the Titans or any other team that makes a move, and it helps all the candidates. There's really nobody that this helps, this rule to be put in place the way it is. It's stupid, NFL. Change it.
Well, and forgive me, but you don't have to interview someone twice to hire them.
No.
I mean,
which is why, again.
I mean, again, that's why I'm saying it's
Josh
silly.
McDaniels is the Colts coach, folks. We know this.
He interviewed once.
Like,
so what
Matt Patricia is the Lions coach, and Pat Shurmur is the Giants coach.
So whether it's once or twice, what does it matter? I mean, you know, you can hire the coach either way. And it's like
I know Stillman doesn't buy it yet, but the ink is all but dry on these contracts.
Yeah, listen, I agree with that, but I also agree it's not dry until it's dry.
Okay, fair enough.
Because.
All right.
I mean, Josh McDaniels has shown he's got some issues.
If he doesn't take the Colts job, that's another reason why I don't want him as my head coach, because he's agreed to something and then backed out of it.
But I don't like that. You know, and I don't know Josh McDaniels, but from what I understand of the guy, he's a guy who might try to leverage.
He's Ken Whisenhunt 2.0 is what he is.
Yeah. Okay.
And we don't want that here. In
no, we don't.
No, we don't.
So I don't trust that. But I also don't understand what's the second interview going to teach you?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, you have these guys all day. You've got their doctrine in front of you.
Yeah.
I mean, what more are they going to?
They've
tell
given you like a 1,000-page notebook on what their plan is. I'm with you. I agree. I think it's stupid. It hurts the Titans. It hurts the candidates. It hurts the teams. It's just stupid. So NFL, come on. John Kincaid, anything but stupid, going to join us when we come back. One of my favorites in the industry. Cannot wait to talk with him. We'll do that when we come back right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. John Kincaid, welcome to the show. Did Julian Council just propose to you?
He wasn't laughing at me. He was just like going, he was being very concerned there.
It's funny.
I'm on a steep road, and the car is not handling well right now on this steep roadway. It is. In fact, I'm like, I made it all the way towards here, and now it is just this is just mayhem.
Trying to get up here. Two keys to driving in the ice: do not slam the brakes.
Yeah, he knows. Okay. Well, John, it's for our audience, John. People in Nashville have no idea. And Julian texted me and said, hey, we're going to talk with John Kincaid tomorrow. I said, great. Can I ask him about the blizzard of 92? And he doesn't believe me that that was a thing because I lived in Atlanta in 92 and there was a blizzard.
93.
That's what I meant, the blizzard of 93.
It was so big it took 2 years.
It was a thing. It was a terrible thing, and it was a terrible thing in Philly, too. It was really bad in Philly, too. So.
All right. Thanks, I'm shocked, though.
I've never gotten stuck. I've never gotten in any kind of trouble like this on the roads ever, and this is really not fun right now.
Well,
this is not fun at all.
Do we need to let you go, man? Like, are you going to be okay?
Can I ask you about Matt LaFleur? Ask me about Matt LaFleur. I'd love to tell you about Matt LaFleur. I would love to give you an idea about Matt LaFleur, because let me tell you something. The Falcons missed a boat, and they would potentially be playing this weekend if they had kept Matt LaFleur. But they didn't. They didn't keep him as the offensive coordinator. Dan Quinn went out and decided to hire Steve Sarkisian without interviewing any other candidates for an offensive coordinator position that was vacated by Shanahan. And so, I mean, I asked questions about that hiring process from the beginning. But we just found out yesterday that Dan Quinn never ever interviewed any other candidate, which is just crazy.
So give me sort of your breakdown of Matt LaFleur's philosophy, his style, the personality. Sort of take the Titans fans, because he's obviously going to get an interview with the Titans, and he's a name that a lot of people are very intrigued by, is not calling the plays with Sean McVay, but clearly Sean McVay is a big part of the development of Jared Goff and the offense. Sort of take us behind the scenes. What kind of guy is this? What kind of personality is he? And what type of offensive philosophy do you think he has?
Okay, Matt LaFleur was considered too young by the Falcons to be even considered for their offensive coordinator position. And then I think what they got a glimpse of is they got a glimpse of what they saw this year out of Sean McVay, and they realized, hey, we may have made a mistake here. We may have made a mistake. We should have given this guy a better look. He wasn't considered to be legitimately ready for an opportunity like being an offensive coordinator in the NFL. But then there were a lot of people last year that were saying Sean McVay wasn't ready to be an NFL head coach either. And look what happened. He proved that he was. We get hung up a lot of times on these age things. We get hung up on the age of candidates and what they're about, instead of looking at just their qualifications and who they learned from. LaFleur was a guy who was considered, I'm trying to put it best. He was considered a bit nerdy, bit of a nerd, bit of a football wonk, like a statistics guy and a studies guy and a head in the film room guy, and not exactly the Dan Quinn-type football coach that's going to go and tear his shirt off and go pump weight in the weight room and things like that, which Sean McVay isn't one of those guys either. Sean McVay was the state championship-winning quarterback at the school where my daughter attends here in Atlanta just 15 years ago. And Sean McVay is no beast. But he was considered more of a football guy. That's where I guess the knock on LaFleur was, is that he didn't fit the suit. Is that an analogy that somebody would understand?
Yeah.
He didn't really fit the suit.
And I'm going to bring up a name as a Chicagoan that it sounds like you're describing to me, and that's Mark Trestman. Is that a fair comparison?
Okay, that's a fair comparison. It's just that, but the thing is, though, Trestman had a resume, whereas this kid doesn't yet. I'm telling you this, if they think he's good enough in a guy McVay sees something in him, that's good enough for me. It's good enough for me. This is a new age of football. It doesn't have to be. Bill Belichick never played a snap of meaningful football in his life.
More and more guys are like that.
Correct. This is why a new age guy with new age thinking, with a different, you know, a different approach to the game, understanding it. Like, I love Sean. I love McVay. I admire him. I love that attitude. And even I asked questions last year whether he would be too young for the opportunity. Guess what? He wasn't too young for the opportunity. There are a lot of mistakes that get made in coaching hires. There are a lot of mistakes that get made. I don't think that Sean McVay being young, I think we've learned, being young doesn't make you a mistake. John Gruden wasn't a mistake when he got an opportunity at a young age. We need to stop getting hung up on age. And I can tell you this, LaFleur is considered a guy that really does understand the game. He understands football. He understands the game. So I would find it a very intriguing proposition. I just wonder, though, LaFleur with Mariota, whether that's the play. We saw it last year. He studied under Kyle Shanahan, and Shanahan loved the guy. And he obviously has studied under McVay. I just wonder if the whole catering an offense to Mariota is absolutely, that's what you got to do with a head coach, and whether maybe you just need a quarterback coach to do that and a more head coach to overlook the entire operation that isn't as tied into that.
That's what's interesting to me is I sort of am falling into the, I like the Mike Vrabel, Steve Wilks of the world as the head coach, and I like to see someone like LaFleur or DeFilippo come in and be the offensive coordinator, and then you're not putting the entire, you know, the entire operation on his shoulders, so to speak. But we just saw Lincoln Riley win a Big 12 championship at 34 in his first year. So the age, I'm with you on the age thing.
Age is something that is just, it's an over-talk topic.
It's an excuse.
It really is. It's an over-talk topic. It really is. It's that, are you qualified or not? Have you checked the boxes or not? Do you have a reputation that is solid or not? And that's the key. And he has that kind of reputation. And I can tell you, there were many within the Falcons building who would have supported his candidacy for offensive coordinator. But Dan Quinn was going to go with a guy, obviously, that Pete Carroll told him to. That Pete Carroll told him, hey, this is a great guy. He's been a head coach in college. He knows how to coach quarterbacks. He knows offenses. If you notice what the Falcons are doing, now they're going to go hire a quarterbacks coach to assist Steve Sarkisian. To me, that's where you get into these problems: who's the guy? You know, who's the guy that has the solid resume? Let him be the candidate that you pick. And I'll tell you, I don't know if it's the best fit for you guys. The only question being Marcus Mariota. That's the question. So much of your organization is tied up into that decision to draft that guy and to build around that guy. So that's the only thing I have a hard time telling you guys, yeah, it's going to be okay with a guy like Matt LaFleur.
So who let's take LaFleur out of it. Who would you hire, and how much confidence do you have in John Robinson to make the right hire?
I'd feel better about – I'll tell you, I think I'd feel better with a more experienced guy – that had been a coordinator, I think I'd feel more better with that. So I don't know about Vrabel. I haven't read enough about him as far as what people think his reputation is going to be as a coach. But I certainly think that might be safer. It might end up being a safer hire. But the thing is, do you want to go safe? The Rams didn't go safe. And the Rams had a marvelous year. So I don't think being safe is necessarily the way to go.
John, are you safe right now still? Are you currently still on the road?
I am on the side of the road, but I'm right outside of Battery Atlanta. I'm going to sneeze for a second. Excuse me. I'm right outside Battery Atlanta where our offices are. Our offices are right next to the Braves' new stadium. But it's very hilly and it's very steep, and there are literally cars just now sort of stranded on the hill. So that is where we're at right now. It's treacherous. But
well,
I'll be okay. I'm a man's man. I can handle this thing.
We're praying for you, John.
You got it, man. Take care of yourself, and I hope everybody in Nashville is having a blast.
we are in the media, that's for sure. Thanks, John.
Oh, man. See you guys.
All right, John Kincaid, 680 The Fan, one of the best in the business. I think Julian's proposing a second time now on the phone.
obviously a fan of Matt LaFleur.
You know, clearly, there's no question about it. I do find the let's get to this when we come back, because there is his only concern is, does it mesh with Marcus Mariota? So we'll get to that when we come back, and also, of course, a little bit of Preds talk as well. So we'll do that as we continue to break down all of these candidates. We will have on coming up next hour, as we've now talked about Steve Wilks with Darren Gant. We've talked about Matt LaFleur with John Kincaid. We'll talk with John Harris, the Texans analyst from Houston, to break down Mike Vrabel as we continue to give you some in-depth analysis of who these guys are that are currently on the Titans coaching board as well. We'll get to the Mariota-LaFleur combination. Is he ready? We'll do that when we come back right here. Cordy Curtis, Braden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're listening to 102.5 here live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. Corey Curtis, Deuce 2 Sports Director, Braden Gall, Julian Council, Intern Calvin. The question is, and we'll get to the Preds here in just a second. John Harris going to join us top of the hour, covering the Houston Texans, of course, and we'll break down the Mike Vrabel candidacy for the Tennessee Titans head coaching job as we continue to dive deeper into these names and look at who the Titans are interested in, get to know them a little bit more. The interesting thing there, John Kincaid clearly in favor of hiring Matt LaFleur, who is the current offensive coordinator for the LA Rams, does not call the plays.
I don't know if he said he thought they should hire him. He's
on board for him as a candidate.
Yes.
His question is, does it fit with Marcus Mariota?
Yes.
And I think that is what John Robinson's real charge is right now, because said the word maximize talent on the roster 6 times in the press conference. What is the right offense for Marcus Mariota? I don't think anybody really knows right now what that looks like.
Because everybody assumes he needs to be in the shotgun, running out of the spread in a no huddle, when his play action numbers are off the charts.
Number one quarterback in the league.
So that would go against that. He needs to be protected. They need to have a run game, and I think he can be a pretty good quarterback. I think with Marcus, this is my personal belief, that during the season with the youth and the change they had at wide receiver and him coming back from the injury that he had, he was just not on board with his receivers as much as he would have liked to have been. And I feel like with some of the mistakes that were made in the receiving core, that there was some lost trust, and his read slowed down some, and there was some hesitancy.
And I do think, from a coaching standpoint, I do not think the offense is very imaginative. I thought the play calling was bizarre and sort of too cute at times and would stop drives dead in its tracks. Then you throw in that they need to upgrade the talent on the interior of the offensive line, that you've got an injured quarterback, an injured DeMarco Murray, an injured Corey Davis, two rookies in Jonnu Smith and Taywan Taylor, who clearly aren't ready to play in the NFL from a complete game standpoint. Like, they have the athletic ability, clearly, but Jonnu Smith, I can't even count the number of holding penalties. So, like, one side of his game needs to be worked on. Taywan Taylor still clearly has a lot to work on to be a good player. Eric Decker, Rishard Matthews, we know what we're going to get out of those guys. Very dependable players. And Rishard Matthews, I think, I think there is another level of play calling that clearly could have been reached. And I think that's sort of the impetus of this. When I say what is the best offense for Marcus Mariota, I don't think it's the no huddle. I don't think it's the air raid spread. I don't think it's purely under center and I formation pro style. I think it's a combo platter of all of that. And I know multiple is like this catchphrase for every coach now. Oh, what's your offense going to be, coach? Multiple. What's your defense going to be, coach? Multiple. Well, we get that, but what does it really look like? And I think Mariota is fine, especially in the intermediate to short passing game, which is what Tom Brady does so exceptionally well. He throws between the hashes. I think Mariota is going to be great at that. That's why Delanie Walker's so good. I think once all those pieces come together and you've got an imaginative play caller along with it and sort of a dynamic play designer to go with it, I think that is what the offense looks like. I don't know what routes that means.
Yeah.
I don't know where... What does that mean for Corey Davis's route tree? I don't know. I don't know what that looks like.
You know what, to me, and I can't remember if I brought it up on the show or not, I want to see receivers in position to make plays with the football after they catch it. And when I look at this offense the last 2 years, that's one of my biggest beefs. And this is a guy who knows the head coach really well and gets along with him, and it's what I would say to him is, how are you going to get your receivers in position to make plays with the football? Because too often, it's catch and hit or catch and go out of bounds.
I think that's a great point, because the most obvious example of this to me was what Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy Garoppolo did to the Titans.
I can't completely agree with
you. Those were nobody names playing for their, and they were 4 or 5 yards open on every play.
And they were streaking across the field, turning it up, and getting yards after catch.
That is play design and play execution and play calling to get people open. And that, to me, is where the Titans clearly just weren't. And I think it's more about old school route trees that Mularkey and Rubisky are really big fans of. It's not this. There are new styles of routes that you run that just exist. And I'm not going to say it's the Patriots thing, but they have perfected it with Tom Brady, who happens to be the greatest of all time. But Jimmy Garoppolo and Kyle Shanahan, you saw Kyle Shanahan out-scheme a Hall of Famer, Dick LeBeau,
schemed
with bad players,
open.
And they were wide open.
Yeah, schemed people
the
open.
Bad That's Selleck was wide open.
And you know, we've seen how many receivers does it take in a route? I don't know, because I'm not a fan of sending out five wide unless there's an outlet for him to get rid of that football in 2 seconds. I mean, because I'm not about the Wisenhunt return days of watching quarterbacks drop back 7 steps and waiting guys to go 50 yards downfield and just getting smoked.
If you're picking up 7 or 8 yards per carry on the ground, you can sprinkle in a 7-step play-action pass drop.
Yeah.
But that's not the impetus of the offense. The impetus has to be a quick release, fast passing attack with innovative offensive schemes and routes, and that is what Kyle Shanahan, again, the most perfect example of this to me is what Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy Garoppolo did to the Titans on that Sunday afternoon in San Francisco.
And along those lines, as we're talking about personnel, one of the spots we have not talked about is running back. And I think you and I are on the same page where we think the Titans need a change at running back. And we're both huge fans of DeMarco Murray, but understand that he's breaking down.
I would not be surprised. There's, one more year on the contract? About
$6 million.
I would not be surprised if they decided to part ways with him.
Or if he just retired.
Or if he just retired. Either of those things would not surprise me. If they re-signed him for a couple of years and he wanted to really bust it and come back and play for a couple years, I wouldn't be surprised at that either.
He would have to take a reduced pay.
I think either way, as I'm looking at draft boards, there's names like John Kelly, Tennessee fans are going to know, Josh Adams at Notre Dame, Rashad Penny at San Diego State. I think there's a lot of talent in this running back class that you can get in the third, fourth, and fifth round that can give you a more dynamic playmaker at that position, should DeMarco Murray not be a part of the equation moving forward. But again, that all comes back to an innovative offensive scheme that uses those players in the right way. I don't know, maybe maximizes their ability.
When you looked at what the Patriots do with White and with Lewis and the speed they use and getting those guys moving with the football on the outside, that's impressive. And we haven't seen a lot of that. And I'm not trying to bag Derrick Henry, but I don't think he's the guy for that type of play.
All right, John Harris going to join us when we come back. Texans analyst, let's get to know Mike Vrabel a little bit and why he might fit as a Titans potential head football coach. Corey Curtis, Braden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game.